This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. We're during this holiday season. One of the things you're going to hear people saying all the time is, isn't it a shame we don't celebrate Christmas today the way we used to? Not as intense, not as meaningful as the old-time celebrations of Christmas. Well, you know what? If you look at the true history of the United States of America, in the early days of this country, Christmas was no big deal. It was not celebrated as much as it is today. And the way that Christmas conquered big pockets of resistance in the middle colonies, in New England, and finally became our official great national holiday, one of these holidays that links all Americans, whether you're Christian or not, because it is such an important part of our national identity. The way that it became that huge unifying symbol for America involves a truly remarkable figure, the figure of Santa Claus, who really is, despite his origins in Turkey and in Holland and in other countries, an American innovator. We will get to that all as part of this very special broadcast, The Secret History of the Christmas Holiday. And for those who say, gee, I wish we celebrated Christmas the way they used to, keep in mind the very first meeting of Congress under the new Constitution. The very first Congress. That Congress, how did it celebrate Christmas on December 25th, 1789? Christmas was a day just like any other day. Congress was in session. You may remember that back in the Puritan days, Parliament even passed a law that you had to have Parliament in session during the Christmas holiday. You couldn't observe it by desisting from any of that. In fact, one of the things that struck people who visited the United States from England, like the English actress Fanny Kemble, who came to America for Christmas in 1832, she reported, comparatively no observances of tides and times punctuate the American year. Christmas Day is no religious day, and hardly a holiday with them. New Year's Day is perhaps a little, but only a little more so. And Fanny Kemble was not visiting New England primarily. She was mostly in New York. In 1818, there was a New Yorker who ran a boarding school, and he reported that his boarding school allowed only 2 week-long vacations in the course of the year, plus the 4th of July, plus Thanksgiving, but Christmas and New Year's were altogether ignored. In fact, Christmas was ignored in many parts of the country, except for the South. The South was a place where Christmas was most revered, where people were most enthusiastic about it. George Washington was enthusiastic about it. He liked to feast and to hunt on Christmas and would often observe Christmas Day with a special hunt in honor of the day. And he also would go to church. That was part of his personal tradition. But another Southerner from Carolina, who was sent off to Princeton in 1805, was James Iredell Jr. And he wrote to a friend of his named Ebenezer Pettigrew in 1805, "But this day, which in Carolina is welcomed with so many demonstrations of joy, is here at Princeton regarded almost with perfect indifference and passed over as but little more than an ordinary day." So it took a while for Christmas to catch hold for the entire country. And one side note about why that even was a good thing during the struggle for independence during the Revolutionary War. One of the key battles, the most inspiring battles of the whole Revolution, was the Battle of Trenton. And you may remember the story, that's Washington crossing the Delaware. Well, he did that on Christmas of 1776. And one of the reasons that the Americans were able to prevail is because they surprised the Hessians, the mercenaries who worked for the British, and the British at Trenton, New Jersey, because they were all drunk. They had been celebrating Christmas. They were big celebrators of Christmas. But the Americans were not. And particularly the keys to that battle, the Marblehead Regiment from Massachusetts, the regiment of John Glover, and those Massachusetts men would have had no significance attached to them at all to Christmas. It was much less common in the American Army for people to make a significant occasion of the Christmas holiday than it was in the British Army. And on that one crucial battle in 1776, the Battle of Trenton, that proved to be a big advantage for the Americans. So how did things change? What happened? Part of what happened is recorded in a wonderful book. It's a book by Penny L. Restad. That's R-E-S-T-A-D, and I recommend it heartily. It's called Christmas in America, A History. What this professor from the University of Texas at Austin records is that part of what happened is immigration, because most of the immigration that came to the United States after the War for Independence was Catholic immigration. A lot of Irish people, a lot of Germans from the south of Germany, and Catholic people have always brought with them a very strong attachment to Christmas. There was never the division within the Catholic community about the observance of Christmas that there was in the Protestant community. And part of what the immigrants also brought was diversity and increasing urbanization. And that meant that almost everybody, like it or not, ended up being exposed to the Christmas holiday. And when people were exposed, well, it looked pretty attractive. All of a sudden, you saw people who were singing and enjoying themselves and churches decorated with greenery. And that looked very appealing, even for people who might not have been raised that way. There's a description by Henry Ward Beecher. And Henry Ward Beecher later became one of the famous preachers and teachers of the 19th century. He was born in 1813, but he reports that he knew nothing of Christmas until he was 30 years old. As a child, however, growing up in Litchfield, Connecticut, he had a lot of fascination with the Christmas music and lights in the local Episcopal church. "To me, Christmas was a foreign day," he wrote in 1874. "When I was a boy, I wondered what Christmas was. I knew there was such a time because we had an Episcopal church in our town, and I saw them dressing that church with evergreens and wondered what they were taking the woods in church for, but I got no satisfactory explanation." However, the fact that people lived increasingly in towns with many different churches, and some of those churches observed Christmas, and often those churches would welcome strangers, would welcome visitors, all of these customs became more commonly known and became more attractive, partially as people moved to cities. It was easy if you lived out in the country and there was only one church in the countryside that was your church that you went to. You could avoid the observance of Christmas, and people did in many parts of the United States. But with greater urbanization and greater, yes, we'll say it, diversity, Christmas became a bigger deal. And part of the big deal surrounding Christmas involved the figure of St. Nicholas, of Santa Claus. Now, here, it's a very, very long way from Myra, Turkey, to New York City. But that's a journey that we have to take if we want to understand why it was that Christmas ultimately conquered all of America and then conquered the entire world. Because part of the popularity is based on this saint of the old Catholic Church, who was the Bishop of Myra. It's near the modern town of Finike, Turkey. And he lived sometime in the 300s. We don't know that much about him. But he is one of the most popular saints in the Roman Church and in the Greek Orthodox Church as well. In fact, there aren't many documents about him, just a few lives of St. Nicholas. But one of the things we know is that he was born into a wealthy family. His parents died. He inherited a whole bunch of money and then began giving it away. And in one particular case, he gave it away in a very memorable manner, putting gold into three bags and then throwing those bags with gold into a window to help three girls who were destitute. But St. Nick, St. Nicholas, put the bags of gold through the window, and through his kindness helped these girls live more satisfying, more uplifting lives. So how did he become Kris Kringle? We'll tell you as part of the secret history of...
Why be held back by pain and difficulty and soreness and stiffness when Relief Factor is available and available so readily? You have nothing to lose but your pain and the whole world to gain. This is $19.95 for a three-week quick start, which can reduce the inflammation, it can reduce the pain, it can reduce the soreness and stiffness and make you feel better. Go to michaelmedved.com, click on the banner for Relief Factor, michaelmedved.com, find the banner for Relief Factor. If you're troubled by Washington moving toward more government control, income taxes, rent control, and centralized decision-making, now is the time for you to take action. At Washington Policy Center, we want free market reforms that make Washington the best place to raise a family, to get a job, or to start a business. WPC is nationally renowned for its effectiveness in an ideologically hostile state. Get off the sidelines. Become a member today at WashingtonPolicy.org. That's WashingtonPolicy.org.
Well, just when you thought it couldn't get any better, MyPillow is launching the MyPillow 2.0. Back when MyPillow was invented, it had everything you could want in a pillow. Now, nearly two decades later, they've discovered a new technology that makes MyPillow even better. The MyPillow 2.0 has the patented adjustable fill of the original MyPillow, and now with brand new fabric that is made with a temperature-regulating thread. The MyPillow 2.0 is the softest, smoothest, and coolest pillow you'll ever own. Say goodbye to tossing and turning and flipping your pillow over in the middle of the night, and more great news. On the MyPillow 2.0, buy one, get one free with promo code MEDVED. MyPillow 2.0 with its temperature regulating technology is 100% made in the USA and comes with a 10-year warranty and a 60-day money-back guarantee. Just go to MyPillow.com and click on the radio podcast square to receive the MyPillow 2.0 buy one, get one free offer. Just when you thought MyPillow couldn't get any better, MyPillow 2.0 gives you the best pillow ever. Enter promo code MEDVED at MyPillow.com to get your MyPillow 2.0s today.
Complement your health with hemp-derived cannabinoid oil. We've always believed that the closer to Earth, the better it is for our bodies. Our hemp-derived cannabinoid oil is phytocannabinoid-rich, full-spectrum, and organically grown. Finally, hemp made easy, clean, and effective. GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203. That's right, we cut through the red tape. It's now available at GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203.
Wellness and self-care doesn't have to be complicated. So keep it simple and take good care of yourself with Sunny Bay Heating Pads. Our heating pads soothe pains in the neck, back, and shoulders while relaxing muscles and increasing blood circulation. Sunny Bay Heating Pads have always been made in the USA and hand-filled to perfection with the highest quality materials. Sunny Bay Heating Pads are the perfect wellness gift for loved ones or yourself. See all of our high-quality products at sunny-bay.com, including heated body pads, neck pillows, heated neck and body wraps, and our stress-reducing lavender line. They're all affordable, durable, and in stock now and ready for immediate shipping direct from sunny-bay.com. Read our trusted, authentic, and real reviews at sunny-bay.com or just search for Sunny Bay Heating Pad. To your good health and wellness from Sunny Bay.
Are you afraid to go to the mailbox because of letter after letter from the IRS? Are they stacking on more and more penalties and interest? By now, you know the problem won't go away on its own. Don't let the IRS chase you to your grave with penalties and interest and liens and levies. You need real help now. I'm Dan Pilla. I wrote the book on tax debt settlement, and I help thousands of people solve tax problems they thought couldn't be solved. I can help you too. Call 800-34-NO-TAX or go to my website, danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com. Danpilla.com.
You're listening to a special broadcast of The Michael Medved Show, The Secret History of Christmas. For more history shows, go to medvedhistorystore.com.
A special edition of The Michael Medved Show on the secret history of the Christmas holiday. Talking a little bit about the real St. Nicholas and the way that Santa Claus ultimately conquered all of America for Christmas. Now, what about this real St. Nicholas? He was born in Turkey As close as we can gather, it was around the year 280, and he was a pretty spiritual guy. One of the stories about him is that when he was born, his mother did what mothers normally do, which is she offered him some nursing nourishment, but he said no. He refused it, because even though he was a tiny baby, he knew somehow that this was a religious fast day, and he wasn't supposed to suckle on that day at all. He went on to work all kinds of miracles, and to have one particular story that really circled around the world and helped to establish his reputation for generosity and kindness, when there were three daughters of an impoverished nobleman who were about to be sold into prostitution, he saved them by throwing bags of gold, part of his inherited wealth, through the window. And you can see that the way that those bags of gold ended up being bags of toys, well, it wasn't that long a distance. Of course, St. Nicholas died a very long time ago, sometime in the 4th century. And his feast day was December 6th. Beginning several hundred years after his death, people began celebrating his feast day as an occasion for giving gifts and cherishing his memory. Part of what happened is that his remains got moved from Turkey, where he was buried, to the Italian village of Bari, a poor town in southern Italy. A number of soldiers brought back his remains. A cathedral was built there, a church was built there in his honor, and Christian pilgrims from all over the world came to honor the memory of St. Nicholas. And throughout Europe, people began observing this feast day as a day particularly to honor children and to honor one another with gifts and feasting and St. Nicholas's memory. And part of what this involved was people conjuring up an image of St. Nicholas. He was usually portrayed not as anybody who was fat at all or jolly or round or anything like that, but a rather gaunt person who would be dressed up in red. He was a bishop in Turkey. He was an early bishop of the church. He would be dressed up in red with a bishop's mitre and often riding in on a white horse. In Holland, where St. Nicholas became particularly popular, he would arrive every December 6th. He'd arrive on a boat with his assistant. Now, his assistant is kind of politically incorrect. I'm sorry, I do have to tell you about it. We try to avoid political incorrectness, but sometimes it is unavoidable. His assistant was named Schwarze Peter, which means Black Peter, and his assistant was a slave. This is not one of the things that we should reintroduce, I don't think, into Christmas celebrations or to the image of Santa Claus. And oh yeah, the name Santa Claus comes from the way that the Dutch would say the shortened version of Niklaus. Niklaus would be Klaus, Claus, and so Santa Claus would be the way you'd say Saint Claus. Sinterklaas, Santa Claus, and that's how it came to be known. Now, what about this Kris Kringle name? Well, this is fascinating. Part of what happened is with the Protestant Reformation, Martin Luther and his followers wanted to get rid of all of the feast days for saints, wanted to get rid of all of the worship of saints, and St. Nicholas was no exception, despite the fact that he was so popular. It just seemed to them a way of distracting people from the appropriate worship of Jesus Christ and the return to scriptures. So what Luther saw personally was that even though people were willing to give up many saints, they weren't willing to give up St. Nicholas because they enjoyed that feast day so much and they associated him already with the Christmas season, because obviously the feast day on December 6th was part of the Christmas season. So what Luther suggested is that instead of telling kids about St. Nicholas, who would bring them gifts, they tell the kids that the gifts would be brought by the Christ child himself. And they created imagery for children of the Christ child traveling around the world and giving gifts. Now, how do you say Christ child in German, which of course was Martin Luther's language? Christkindl. That's right, Christkindl. What does that sound like? Kris Kringle. That's where the name comes from. The German pronunciation of Christ child, Christkindl, Kris Kringle. And that became one of the names for Santa Claus also, because guess what? Martin Luther was not successful in replacing St. Nicholas with the Christ child. Now, the first mention of Santa Claus at all in the New World occurred in a New York newspaper, Rivington's Gazetteer. Now, this was published by a very interesting guy. James Rivington was a notorious Tory, one of those people who opposed George Washington and favored the British. And then it turned out after the Revolutionary War, he may have been a double agent. He may have actually been a spy for Washington. But he printed in his paper on December 23rd, 1773, the first mention ever of Santa Claus in the New World. And he reported that the anniversary of St. Nicholas, quote, otherwise called Santa Claus, had been celebrated the previous Monday by a great number of sons of that ancient saint. The following year, the same newspaper announced a second gathering of the descendants of the ancient Dutch families to be held Monday, December 8th, being the anniversary of St. Nicholas. Well, they got the date wrong. It's December 6th is his anniversary. In any event, what this goes to is the point that a lot of these fascination with St. Nick and with Santa Claus was brought to the New World by the early Dutch settlers who created and established New Amsterdam, which later became New York. And they did not have a huge focus on St. Nick, but when Washington Irving, in the early years of the 1800s, began writing nostalgically about the good old Dutch days, he wrote a very famous book, funny book, called The Knickerbocker's History of New York. One of the things he talked about and brought to the attention of the whole world was the way that the Dutch celebrated this favorite saint who continued to be honored by the Dutch, even though they were very much Protestant and very much part of the Protestant Reformation. And in fact, one of the old societies, the New York Historical Society, which was founded to try to preserve the Dutch heritage, in 1804, it set its annual meeting on December 6th, the festival of St. Nicholas, who was sort of a local Dutch hero. They distributed a woodcut to each member who attended that meeting, and that woodcut showed St. Nick. And he held in one hand a money purse, which he was going to give to kids on Christmas, and on the other hand, he held a birchen rod. The birchen rod was for the bad kids. There was, in fact, a very famous poem called A Children's Friend. It was actually published in a magazine called A Children's Friend, and it was about a visit of Santa Claus. This was before the famous Night Before Christmas. But this poem had some pretty grim news for kids who weren't going to behave themselves. The good news was they described old Santa Claus as the steady friend of virtuous youth, the friend of duty and of truth, found good girls or boys that hated quarrel, strife, and noise, left an apple or a tart or wooden gun or painted cart. And that was the good news. But the bad news? Well, pretty mean. All of this got transformed by a scholar of Hebrew who wrote one of the most famous poems in the English language, coming up.
Are you curious about what might be missing from your diet and supplement choices? Take a free health assessment to identify your possible nutrient deficiencies. As a certified holistic health coach, I will help you assess and prioritize a supplement program based on Dr. Wallach's recommendations. Call Linda at 833-VITAL-90. That number to call is 833-848-2590. That's 833-VITAL-90.
What if you could cut your heating bills this winter with your existing wood-burning fireplace and not spend thousands doing it? You can with Great Wall of Fire Fireplace Grates. Our U.S.-patented, made-in-America Wall of Fire Grates increase fireplace efficiency, eliminate fireplace smoke problems, and come with a 30-day money-back guarantee. See our grates in action and get free shipping from walloffire.com or call 800-274-7364. Fireplace heat without fireplace smoke. Walloffire.com.
USA News Update. In Bethlehem, Christmas carrying a heavy heart this year amid the ongoing Israel-Hamas conflict in Gaza. The traditional Christmas Day events and concerts have all been called off, leaving Manger Square deserted and guarded by security forces. King Charles III expressed his hope that we can collectively work together to safeguard one another in his second Christmas message as the reigning monarch of England.
My heart has been warmed by countless examples of the imaginative ways in which people are caring for one another.
Although he did not explicitly mention the Israel-Hamas conflict, the king acknowledged the prevalence of increasingly tragic conflicts around the world. Last-minute holiday travelers packing airports nationwide, causing considerable congestion. Today's statistics show 1,400 delays and 140 cancellations reported so far, creating significant travel disruptions. John Schaefer, USA News.
The Silver Lungs Generator is the only all-encompassing professional class product for producing endless colloidal and ionic silver solutions right from the convenience of your home. With recent regulations threatening the sale of silver-based supplements, now you can secure yourself and your family by producing your own silver solutions anywhere, anytime. You can have the peace of mind knowing that you can create endless supply of silver anytime, anywhere, for any application. The Silver Lungs Generator is a one-time purchase that requires no maintenance nor replacement parts for the life of the unit. This product was designed to be an invaluable part of your vital preparations. For a detailed report on the differences between ionic silver, colloidal silver, and what most silver solution manufacturers are producing, please visit our website at www.silverlungs.com for more information on why you should be producing your own silver solutions right from your home forever.
Most folks don't realize this fact. Our country is only 4 missed meals away from chaos, and those meals can vanish fast. In a national emergency, fragile supply chains break down and will wipe grocery store shelves clean in a matter of hours. Before this happens, there's something you should do today. Let's stock up on emergency food storage. My Patriot Supply is the company millions of American families trust for their emergency supplies. You should, too. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and secure their best-selling 3-month emergency food kits. Each kit contains delicious breakfasts, lunches, and dinners, averaging over 2,000 calories per day. My Patriot Supply also sells large solar generators, gravity-powered water filtration systems, off-grid room heaters for when the power goes out, heirloom seeds, and other survival necessities. Order by 3 p.m. and your items ship the same day, fast. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com right now. Those who know what's coming, prepare before the chaos starts. MyPatriotSupply.com.
The Secret History of the Christmas Holiday, a special broadcast of the Michael Medved Show, talking about the way that Santa Claus, the spirit, the figure of St. Nicholas, ended up conquering all of America for Christmas. Santa Claus was already fairly well known in New York, partially because of the Dutch influence. And in 1821, there was this popular magazine called The Children's Friend that published a poem that then got republished all across the country. No, it wasn't The Night Before Christmas. That came the next year, actually. But in 1821, they published this account of old Santa Claus, this steady friend of virtuous youth, the friend of duty and of truth, found good girls or boys that hated quarrels, strife, and noise, left an apple or a tart or wooden gun or painted cart. Isn't it terrific that they already see war toys, a wooden gun, as something worth getting on Christmas? But then again, not all children deserve this kind of treatment, according to this poem from 1821. What about the other kind of children? Well, here's what they had to say. The children naughty, in manners rude, in tempers haughty, thankless to parents, liars, swearers, boxers or cheats or base tale bearers. He left them a long black birchen rod, such as the dread command of God directs a parent's hand to use. I mean, can you imagine? They apparently were serious about this birch rod thing. A bad kid would get in his Christmas stocking, they already had Christmas stockings that had been taken over from Europe, would not get a lump of coal. He'd have a birch rod in his stocking, which would be a sign to the parents that the kid needed a beating. So how did we get to the gentle, jolly Santa Claus that we know today? Well, we got there courtesy of an Hebraic scholar, a very devout guy, a member of the Episcopal Church, somebody of Dutch Walloon ancestry, whose name was Clement Clark Moore. He was very much an academic. He helped found the General Theological Seminary. He knew 7 or 8 languages. He taught Oriental and Greek literature. His best-known publication was a huge 2-volume dictionary of Hebrew called a compendious lexicon of the Hebraic language. So this guy knew his stuff. So what was he doing? Writing one of the most famous poems ever written, known as The Night Before Christmas. Well, the story goes that in the year 1822, he was coming home from a Christmas party with his three daughters. He was coming home from Greenwich Village, and he was riding in a sleigh, and he started reciting to them this doggerel that he was making up about Santa Claus. And they loved it, and then later that night, he wrote it down, and then he read it to his family. And everybody in the family loved it. And then the next Christmas, he did the same. And people loved it, and it became sort of a family tradition. And a number of family friends said, Professor Moore, you really should publish this. This is great stuff. I mean, it was the night before Christmas, and all through the house, not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse. All of that? You publish. He said, no. He was embarrassed by it. He was a serious scholar. He didn't want to be known for this. Well, a family friend named Harriet Butler took his copy of it and copied it by hand, and then she snuck off to an out-of-town newspaper in Troy, New York, which, of course, is outside of New York City, where Professor Moore lived. And they published this poem anonymously, because Moore didn't want his name associated with it. It became an overnight sensation. And soon it was published all across the country, anonymously. And a few years later, Professor Moore said, all right, I'm the guilty party, I wrote it. And in fact, he was able to make a few bucks out of it, because later he actually published an authorized copy about 20 years later that had illustrations in it. And then later still, Thomas Nast did illustrations, the great political cartoonist, famous illustrations that showed Santa Claus very much as we know him today. And this is where he got that big broad belt. The red clothes were left over from his days as just a Catholic bishop, but the boots and the stocking cap and the long pipe, all of that was associated with the Dutch remembrance. And the whole idea of Santa Claus being fat, well, this apparently was a clear invention of Professor Moore. And it's said that he based it on his Dutch gardener. This guy ends up being remembered for almost only, exclusively, one thing, and that is writing The Night Before Christmas, and creating the idea of Santa Claus as a jolly old elf. Meanwhile, he did that famous compendious lexicon of the Hebrew language. He was one of the first real estate developers in Manhattan. He helped create the city's Chelsea neighborhood, and he even designed St. Peter's Episcopal Church, the first church in New York City, built in the Gothic Revival style. But what we remember him for? Creating a Santa Claus who was all but irresistible. Another irresistible Christmas tradition that helped to sweep popularity of Christmas throughout the country, the Christmas tree. We'll talk about it coming up.
You're listening to a special broadcast of The Michael Medved Show, The Secret History of Christmas. For more history shows, go to MedvedHistoryStore.com.
On this special broadcast of the Michael Medved Show, a broadcast entitled The Secret History of the Christmas Holiday, there's no question that the poem The Night Before Christmas, the actual formal title of that poem, was an account of a visit from St. Nicholas, helped to popularize the figure of Santa Claus, the figure of St. Nicholas as a giver of joy and glad tidings and all kinds of gifts to children, and helped to spread the entire enjoyment of Christmas all around the country. That poem becoming well known in the 1830s, 40s, and 50s, especially through some beautiful artwork done to illustrate the poem by cartoonist Thomas Nast, who was himself a German immigrant. So much of the traditions that were brought to the New World for Christmas came from elsewhere. The concern about Santa Claus, Sinterklaas, coming from Holland, and the Christmas tree coming largely from Germany. Now, there's an old story about the first Christmas tree, which, let me tell you, is so widely circulated, but it's probably not true. It's a story about Martin Luther, one Christmas Eve, walking through the snowy woods near his home in Wittenberg, Germany, in Saxony, and he's looking up at the stars glittering through the tops of the fir trees, and he decides, wouldn't it be beautiful to take one of these fir trees and bring it into the home and to light candles on it to look like those stars overhead? And you can find some famous old engravings, some famous old paintings of Martin Luther with his family sitting around the first Christmas tree. Now, it's true that Martin Luther wrote Christmas carols. He also helped to popularize the Christkindl, the Christ child, as a storied figure to give gifts in place of St. Nicholas. But there's really very little evidence that he was responsible for the first Christmas tree. The tree, however, did seem to originate as a Christmas symbol, specifically in Germany. One of the reasons for that would be there were a lot of fir trees in Germany. That was the kind of tree that happened to grow there. But the story of the tree and its association with Christmas goes back way before that. There's a story about a saint, St. Boniface in one story, St. Winfrid in another story. In either case, he's known to be an English monk. And apparently, he stopped some very nasty druid priests who were about to sacrifice a little kid in front of a great big oak tree. What he did was, as they were about to sacrifice the kid to the oak tree, he hit the oak tree with his fist, and even though it was a huge tree, miraculously, it came tumbling down, and as the oak tree collapsed, a little tiny, modest, bright green fir tree came up in its place. And this little tree, he's said to have told the crowd of people who looked on, who immediately converted to Christianity, shall be your holy tree tonight. Let this be called the tree of the Christ child. Gather about it in your own homes. There it will shelter no deeds of blood, but loving gifts and rites of kindness.
You're listening to a Michael Medved history program, The Secret History of Christmas. For more history shows, go to MedvedHistoryStore.com.
Why be held back by pain and difficulty and soreness and stiffness when Relief Factor is available and available so readily? You have nothing to lose but your pain and the whole world to gain. This is $19.95 for a 3-week quick start, which can reduce the inflammation, it can reduce the pain, it can reduce the soreness and stiffness and make you feel better. Go to MichaelMedved.com, click on the banner for Relief Factor, MichaelMedved.com, find the banner for Relief Factor. If you're troubled by Washington moving toward more government control, income taxes, rent control, and centralized decision-making, now is the time for you to take action. At Washington Policy Center, we want free market reforms that make Washington the best place to raise a family, to get a job, or to start a business. WPC is nationally renowned for its effectiveness in an ideologically hostile state. Get off the sidelines. Become a member today at WashingtonPolicy.org. That's WashingtonPolicy.org. Instability, vulnerability, uncertainty, volatility, precarious, unpredictable. Now, all of those words describe our banking system right now, as evidenced by the recent collapse of major banks. Michael Medved here for AmFed Coin and Bullion. This was the second largest bank failure in history, and the Federal Reserve has been scrambling to keep this bank run from spreading. Now, if you feel uneasy about having too much money sitting in the bank, you're not alone. Gold, silver, and platinum have had recent gains as investors look for safe places to park their money. Now more than ever, you need to call my good friends Nick Grovich and Company, owner of AmFed Coin and Bullion. I've been doing business with Nick for many years, and I wouldn't go anywhere else. Nick and his team of specialists will provide you with personalized attention, honest information, and sound advice. If you're interested in buying or selling, call AmFed Coin and Bullion, 800-221-7694, 800-221-7694, AmericanFederal.com.
Get healthy, not high, with 100% pure CBD powerful natural pain relief from Veterans Vitality. GCN listeners, have you ever thought about how CBD may help you? I'm sure you have heard about the many benefits of CBD. Well, here's your opportunity to try before you buy. Created by veterans and for everyone who deserves better choices, our CBD is derived from organic hemp, grown in the USA, and third-party tested. Veterans Vitality CBD saves you as much as 25 to 50% over our competition, and a portion of all sales is contributed to veteran nonprofits and events. Many of our customers have experienced improved quality of life, help with anxiety, PTSD, and overall well-being. Our products do not contain THC. They are safe, non-addictive, effective, and 100% legal. GCN listeners, get your free trial bottle of premium CBD by simply paying shipping and handling at GCNFreeCBD.com. That's GCNFreeCBD.com. Again, GCNFreeCBD.com. Offered by Veterans Vitality Premium CBD.
Jose works on a farm. Safety is important. His boss calls 811 to determine where it's okay to dig. This protects Jose from hitting an underground line and from serious injury. Because Jose can't tell exactly where or how deep the lines are, he doesn't dig until 811 tells him it's safe. The most important thing is that Jose works safe and goes home to his family. For more information, visit farmsafe811.org. A message from the Pipeline Operators for Ag Safety Campaign.
I need a tax preparer. How should I choose one?
Using a paid tax preparer this year? Before paying someone to do your taxes, make sure they're qualified. Ask about their fees, experience, and training. Check with the Better Business Bureau. Avoid anyone who promises a higher refund. And review your tax return before you sign it. And make sure your preparer signs it too. For more tips, visit IRS.gov and search Choosing a Preparer.
The association with the tree, with rites of kindness, had to do with some of the old-fashioned Christmas tree ornaments you can see in some museums of American folk art. Some of the most common old Christmas tree ornaments, at the very top of the tree, instead of an angel that we got later, people would put Adam and Eve. Yeah, kind of semi-nude. I mean, not anatomically correct, but nude. Why Adam and Eve? Because the tree was a reminder of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, of original sin, and of the birth of Christ who came to make up for that original sin. And some of the early Christmas trees in this country, including trees that were brought here by German immigrants, would have little inscriptions at the bottom. They would have little scrolls about Adam and Eve and about the sacrifice of Jesus Christ making up for that original sin. The trees would be decorated with candles, with all kinds of paper ornaments. It wasn't until somewhat later that the kind of elaborate glass ornaments began to be mass-produced and sold and became very popular, another triumph of capitalism. And the tree really was introduced as a widespread symbol in England by Prince Albert. Now, Prince Albert was the husband of Queen Victoria, very busy, fine Victorian gentleman who did a lot to enlighten England, but he was also a German. And he brought with him the first tree in the palace, the first tree for the royal family in England. And because he was so popular and Queen Victoria was so popular, after he established that tree in 1841 and decorated it with his very large family, then that custom spread all over England and all over the English-speaking world. Another Christmas custom goes back even further. And there's quite a beautiful story associated with it, and that would be the custom of the manger scene, of the creche. That custom goes all the way back to St. Francis of Assisi. That would be, he was born in 1181, he died in 1226, so it's a very long time ago. And this is probably historically accurate. Apparently, Francis and his friars were the first to write some simple, happy, gospel-based songs, and they were also the first to create a nativity scene. On Christmas Eve, 1223, in order to set before our bodily eyes how he, Jesus, lay in a manger, Francis and his companions worshipped in a cave near Greccio, Italy, surrounded by oxen, sheep, donkeys. An early biographer of St. Francis said, "Neighborhood people prepared with joy according to their capacity, bringing candles and torches to illumine the night that has been the light of the world through its star. Finally, the saint of God arrived and saw it and was glad. The manger was ready, hay was spread, and the ox and ass led in. Thus simplicity was honored, poverty exalted, humility praised. Greccio was made a new Bethlehem. The night became as day to the joy of men and animals. The people were happy at this great mystery. The forest echoed with the voices of the congregation. The rocks cried out in jubilation. The friars sang their debt of praise to God, and the night echoed with their hymns. The saint of God, that would be Saint Francis, stood near the manger, overwhelmed with love and swelling with happiness. And of course, that tradition, so well launched, apparently, on Christmas Eve of 1223, became a cherished tradition in the Catholic Church and made its way to the New World as well. But still, it took a while, and it took a cataclysmic event until Christmas conquered all of the United States. What was that event? The war between the states, the bloodiest war in our history, that finally finished the job of making America safe for Christmas. I'll explain how coming up.
You're listening to a special broadcast of The Michael Medved Show, The Secret History of Christmas. For more history shows, go to medvedhistorystore.com.
This is Michael Medved at michaelmedved.com for Town Hall. The current anguish over racial justice has been punctuated by intensifying demands for monetary reparations to the descendants of enslaved Americans. The prospect of arranging appropriate compensation for uncompensated slave labor that ended 155 years ago remains wildly impractical, but it also goes against the nation's highest ideals. America has always been the land of fresh starts and new life, where you're not judged by who your grandparents were or where they came from. To the greatest extent possible, your progress in life should reflect your own efforts, not your family's past. Slavery reparations emphasize the opposite idea, assigning tax-funded payouts based not on who you are, but on who your great-great-grandparents were. Joe Biden has already expressed support for a commission to evaluate slavery reparations. If this ill-advised effort becomes a major issue in the campaign, the American people will rightly reject a program designed to accentuate, not narrow, racial differences. I'm Michael Medved.
Michael Medved Show, a special broadcast, The Secret History of the Christmas Holiday. And one of the secrets that most people don't recognize about Christmas is that it was relatively late in our national history, not until 1870, that Christmas became an official national holiday after Thanksgiving, after 4th of July, which has always, almost always been a national holiday. The first state to recognize Christmas as a legal holiday was, guess where? In the South, of course. It was Louisiana in 1837, followed by Arkansas in 1838. But by 1860, when the nation split apart in the war between the states, only 13 states had recognized Christmas as a legal holiday. 5 years later, by 1865, that number had gone from 13 states to 31 states. What happened? Well, the Civil War happened, the war between the states. And that helped to create a much more receptive climate for Christmas because of the nostalgic yearning that so many men on the front, on both sides, felt for Christmas at home. And because of the little gestures that occurred on the front lines when they would declare an unofficial Christmas truce between the blue and the gray, and people would exchange little gifts, sometimes some tobacco passed here or there, some coffee or some food or whatever either side had. And part of the recognition that people had, and this was something President Lincoln was very aware of, was that one of the ways to bind up the nation's wounds, to reconcile the nation after all of the bloodshed and the 600,000 dead of the war between the states, was through Christmas. So in 1870, just 5 years after the war ended, Congress voted and made Christmas for the first time a national formal holiday. But what about all that old-style New England Puritan opposition to Christmas? Where did it go? Well, to one extent, you could say that the old-style religiosity of the Puritans had begun to dissipate anyway. There was another factor as well. One of the aspects of New England and those areas of the country where Christmas hadn't been embraced was they're very commercial. And people began to understand in the 1850s and 60s that there was a lot of money to be made with Christmas. That while people were busy buying gifts, there were profits to be made. But there was something else. The objection to Christmas when it existed was an objection to a public holiday where people got together for big groups and big celebrations with lots of drunkenness and firing off weapons and dressing up in costumes. Well, in the early years of the 19th century, through Santa Claus, through Christmas trees, Christmas changed. It became a home-centered holiday, not a holiday of great big public celebrations, but a holiday where you waited at home for Santa to come down the chimney. You decorated your tree in your home. And with that kind of centrality of the home, it was much harder for Puritans or anyone else to object. If you want a copy of this broadcast on the secret history of the Christmas holiday or any other history broadcast we've done on the Michael Medved Show, call Tree Farm Communications, 1-800-468-0464. More essential elements of Christmas, movies, songs, stories, where'd they come from, how'd they come to be, that and more coming up in the greatest nation on God's green earth. This is Michael Medved at michaelmedved.com. Only rarely does a new film come along to remind movie lovers of Hollywood's golden age some 80 years ago. Greyhound, starring Tom Hanks, is that sort of old-fashioned thriller. Notably enriched by state-of-the-art special effects and riveting action sequences showing World War II's Battle of the Atlantic. Hanks, who also wrote the screenplay, portrays a destroyer captain given his first command, leading a crucial Anglo-American convoy across the ocean, but facing destruction by wolf packs of German submarines. Based on a 1955 novel by C.S. Forrester, who also wrote the beloved Horatio Hornblower series, this film gives loving attention to the hero's profound Christian faith. Hanks shows the overburdened commander at prayer on multiple occasions while portraying the emotional bonds between men of every background facing danger together. As with Saving Private Ryan, where Hanks also starred, or the great John Adams miniseries, which he produced, Greyhound enriches our culture with an inspiring story of American heroism. I'm Michael Medved.
Hey, want to feel young again? Are you tired, run down, have aches and pains, brain fog? This is science-based, not hype or fancy marketing. It really works. Carbon 60 helps detoxify your body on the cellular level. It stabilizes free radicals, just like the antioxidants found in red wine and berries do, but on a far smaller, more bioavailable nanoscale. It's like a bottle of electrons, helping your body to function better. You can also apply it on your skin, topically, over muscles, joints, or organs. Most people feel results within minutes. This is not a drug. It's organic carbon. Feel better today. About 95% of our users report more energy and clarity of mind within 10 days. Give us a call at Gruska's Carbon 60 at 720-600-6040 or visit our site at c-60.com. Call 720-600-6040 and feel young again.
I had no idea it would destroy my life, but before it happened, I had a successful business in Austin, Texas. Everyone laughed at me when I shut that business down, but I could not ignore the wake-up call. I was volunteering on a project to get locally grown food into a school. That project was a complete failure, and I discovered that there were few local farmers. There's only 4 days worth of food in the grocery stores, and everything comes 1,500 miles via a just-in-time trucking system. I lost friends and family who told me I was crazy to worry about that, but I kept at it. I'm Marjorie Wildcraft. Those of us who know what's going on in the world know you need to become self-reliant before the dollar collapses. I've created a free webinar at gcnfood.com. I can show you, like I've shown hundreds of thousands of people, how to grow lots of food, even if you have no experience, you're older, or you're out of shape. Do it now, before the stores are boarded up and food is not available at any price. Go to gcnfood.com. GCNfood.com.